Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. We're all here once again.
Full Voltron.
Full Voltron. I thought I was going to join today, but here I am. I've been battling the flu this past week. I see that Aaron Bell copied me with his flu. It's okay, Aaron Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I forgive you. So, I've been sick for a week, but I feel all right. I feel pretty good. Ronnie's here. Travis is here.
What up?
I'm mostly here. So, let's talk about some Aftershock.
Let's do it.
We have some news.
We have some breaking news.
Literally breaking news. This is what, like, 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Not even.
Or so.
10 minutes ago. Yeah. Tell me about this breaking news.
It's Oberon, new comic book, right?
Mm-hmm.
By Ryan Parrott.
Yeah. Of Volition fame.
Yes, that is correct.
Nice, nice.
Yep.
And apparently fairies suck.
Wait, you don't want to tell me the name of the artist?
Oh, it's Milo Skolnowiak.
Yes, you almost did it. Milo Slavkovic.
Oh, see? I suck.
I suck again.
You did pretty good, though. I'm proud of you, Ronnie. If you get an A for effort.
So that way, if he's like at C2E2, I can just call him MS. What's up, MS?
Yep, there you go. And letters by friend of the show, Charles Pridgett.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So continue. Fairies suck.
Yep, fairies suck.
They do suck.
So it's about, I'm pulling it up. Oberon was betrayed by his people and exiled to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the former king of fairies seeks out an innocent, prophesized child in order to manipulate her into becoming his ultimate weapon so he can reclaim his throne.
Mm-hmm. So you know this reminds me of? God damn it. What's the name of that movie? Oh, God. The one with... damn, now I can't remember the damn guy's name. The musician guy that died. What was his name? The Goblin King... It had Jennifer Connelly
in Labyrinth.
It. The Labyrinth. The plot of this reminds me a lot of The Labyrinth. But that's cool because that means that maybe I can get my wife to read it because that's her favorite movie of all time.
Yeah. And Ryan's coming in like Heiser did for Valiant, right? And Adam mm-hmm. Glass did for mm-hmm. Aftershock here because he's done some screen stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I like his style a lot. I think Volition's really fantastic, so I'm excited for this book. Cause I'm not huge into fantasy a lot of times, but I love like fairy magic stuff, so. I'm excited for this, dude. That's coming out February 6th of 2019. So maybe we'll see a C2E2 exclusive.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, dude. C2E2.
Hey, you got your tickets, right?
Yeah.
Sweet.
I'll be joining you guys.
Yeah.
You got approved. You didn't get your tickets, liar.
Well,
yeah, same difference.
You know what I mean. I think they're sending out press passes at the end of next month, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. I saw the email this coming week. Anyways, nobody wants to hear about our goddamn press passes. I'm excited for Oberon, so let's talk about some comics. How about that?
Sounds good.
I've got a lot of comic pages up, and let me find my Aftershock comics. Here we are. I was trying to catch up on my comics today. All right, let's. I'm going to pick the first book today, and I'm going to choose Patience, Conviction, Revenge, number 3. This is written by Patrick Clendon with art by Marco Ferrari, colors by Patricia Comino, and letters by Jim Campbell. So, I'm going to be right up front with you guys. I was a little confused with the start of this issue, but I think once the issue actually got rolling, I really enjoyed it. I think the thing that I really enjoyed about this particular one is that Robot Paul was like the main character of most of the story. And even though I was confused about like some of the plot elements of what Robot Paul was exactly trying to do. Even though I was a little confused about how we got to this place after the way the last issue ended, I really enjoyed the issue. Because, you know, we talked about this when, after issue two, we didn't know if, like, these characters had killed each other, or, like, if Robot Paul had betrayed them, or, like, exactly what was happening. And to be honest, I don't know if that was really answered. But I think it was an interesting story. I really liked the back and forth between some of the characters, but we'll talk about that in a sec. How'd you guys feel about this issue?
Yeah, I gotta agree with, what you were saying, kind of. I'm pretty curious about what the plan is at this point. Yeah. You know, whether there really is a plan.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an exchange where the robot's like, I'm sticking to the plan. The guy's like, what I want to do is the plan, you know,
right.
Like, is this about me getting revenge? So yeah, like that something about him infiltrating the casino, seems to be part of the plan, right?
Yep.
So I wonder if that means that is basically like the head of operations for the organization, you know, like, maybe that guy that is doing the interview is like the big boss, or, you know, high up there.
Yeah. Mr. Whitey.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know if he's like the big boss, but he seems to definitely be up in the organization at least. You know, this issue was less comedic than the first few also. I mean, there were definitely like funny moments, right? Especially when you have the back and forth between Rennie and Marisol. There's like the one panel where he like, I don't even know like what they're playing, but on the table or on the floor or whatever, there's like an asshole jail box that's drawn in chalk. And I was like, why is that there? You know what I'm saying? Like, did Marisol draw an asshole jail? Like, which I could see, right? Like, they seem to have that relationship because they have a past history. But I thought that was curious. And aside from that, like, there wasn't a whole lot of humor, aside from, like, the verbal interactions between the two, right? So, like, when they get attacked by these robots, like, there's a couple funny moments. I think in particular when, I can't remember exactly what happens, but they're, like, falling down and Rennie's riding one of the robots. And he's like, oh, look, if you shoot him in the head, like, you can just ride him all the way down. But aside from that, it didn't feel as comedic as the previous issue, which I'm totally cool with, because I think the second issue was definitely a departure from the first, right, in terms of the atmosphere. So
yeah, it definitely had its one-liners, but
yeah.
It just wasn't full of it like the previous issues were.
Yep.
When they're arguing by the asshole jail,
yeah.
and he's like, Chef Robot, get this chick.
Yeah, I like that.
Grilled cheese stat.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I like that part. There is no Chef Robot either, right? Because it was the warning bot.
Yeah, right.
What was the name of the robot that is getting ready to torture Robot Paul?
It's like Death by Torture Bot.
Yeah, Death by Torture Bot, that's it. I thought that was pretty funny, too. He's like, Death by Torture Bot doesn't want to burn your face.
They call him Mr. Torture Bot.
Yeah, he's like, Death by Torture Bot doesn't want to burn your face. But that is his name. He'll do what he has to do. Like, that was kind of funny, too. I like the way the book flows, though. You know what I mean? You were talking about, like, Ryan doing screenplays and stuff like that and being more cinematic. And you can definitely feel that in this book. Because I could see this being, like, an anime, right? Like, it's first of all, it's got that anime kind of art style.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like full-blown anime, but there's definitely like inspiration from anime. And so when I read this book, some things don't make sense, but I'm okay with it because of the way the story kind of flows in between pages. And I think if this were like a TV show, I think it would work really well.
Yeah. The art to me seems a little Chrononauts.
I like that.
Sean
yeah.
Murphy style.
Yep. Totally could see that. There were some panels that reminded me of like, I know Ronnie, you don't watch anime, but like Cowboy Bebop a little bit. So I could see that. It's kind of like the Sean Murphy style, a little grittier style of anime.
Mm-hmm.
It works really well for this book. Works really well. And I got to tell you, dude, like Robot Paul is awesome. He is the best. Even though his name is Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I still love him.
Yep. Robot Paul is the best Paul.
Yep. Robot Paul is the best version of Paul. Sorry, Paul. Paul doesn't listen. Doesn't matter. But I also like that there's a few gin and tonic jokes in here because, you know, I love me some gin and tonics. That's my thing. And so I like to see that in the book as well. So I'm assuming Ryan loves gin and tonics. So Ryan, if you show up to C2E2, I will buy you some gin and tonics. We will talk about this book.
Yeah, you're going to get the fancy gin?
Dude, there is no other gin.
But I have to correct you there, Mr. Gin and Tonic. Mm-hmm. Who writes this book?
Oh, I said Ryan Parrott. Patrick Clinton, my bad.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was still stuck on Oberon. Yep, you're right. My bad.
I was being patient.
And you have connection. But now, Ronnie, I will seek my revenge.
You got it.
Uh-huh. That's right. So, fine. Ryan can have gin and tonics. Patrick, you can have gin and tonics. We'll all have gin and tonics together.
Gin and tonics for all.
Gin and tonics for everyone. In particular, Cullen Bunn, because he's never had a gin and tonic. What's wrong with him?
Yeah, that's right.
What?
Yeah. We're not going to talk about this on this podcast. We'll talk about that later. Yeah, he's never had a gin and tonic, though. Shame on him.
Okay, so let me ask you guys about this issue, right? Do you think that the bad guys, like Whitey and them, know exactly what's up? Like, they know the plan, you know? Because, like, they pull in, like, the accomplice, Lasky or whatever, the little dude, and they, like, show him being beaten, like, in front of Robot Paul. And then they can, like, proceed to, like, rake him over the coals, basically, and then let him off the hook. So I wonder if they, like, know exactly what's up.
Mm. I was wondering about that, too, because, I mean, obviously they know Rennie, right? Because he wants revenge for a reason. But I don't know if they would know Robot Paul. Like, I don't know if that's been established on where him making all these robots falls in the timeline. My assumption is that he made Robot Paul and Warning Bot and all the other ones, Evangelion or whatever else, after he was kicked out or left the mob. So maybe he doesn't know Robot Paul by name. But I'm sure, like, word gets around, right? Because we've already seen Rennie kind of get in situations in the previous couple issues.
Well, dude, he just castrated, like, all of the muscle for the mob, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that, like, the end of the last issue? So that's going to, like, put you on somebody's radar.
Yeah. Well, and surely somebody recognized him at the brothel, right? Because he used to go there all the time before when he was in the mob.
Right.
So somebody had to have recognized him. So I think it's possible that they maybe knew Robot Paul, or at least knew that Rennie has, like, a group of robots with him. And it just seemed kind of weird that Robot Paul would show up out of nowhere and ask for a job. And also it seemed weird that he was so eager to let him in. So they obviously knew from the very beginning that it just felt weird for Robot Paul to be there. Whether they knew exactly, like, who he's hanging out with or what the plan is, I don't know. But I think they're definitely aware that Rennie's around. So they're a little more vigilant.
Yeah. And the bad guy's name's Welsh, right?
Is that Will Whitey? Yeah. Whitey. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, then there's another dude named Welsh that I think he's the dude that directly screwed over Rennie back in the day.
Yep.
Okay. And he's the dude that is, like, turning screws on Lasky at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably going to be a showdown there coming up soon.
Yep. To go with your point too, Travis, maybe they did know, now that I think about it, because, spoiler alert, at the end of the book, the armored car that Rennie's going after blows up, right? Because he's following that car because he thinks that, what's the, Lex, is it? Whatever the other robot is. Or the guy that Whitey has kidnapped and they're torturing.
Lasky,
yeah, there you go. He thinks Lasky's in there. That's why him and Marisol are going through this whole thing. But obviously he's not in the armored car because the car blows up. So maybe they do know that Rennie's around.
No. Yeah. because Robot Paul tells him that Lasky's not there.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, scratch the plan. Lasky's here. He's being tortured. He's like, well, who the hell's in the car? And then boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm totally digging it.
Yeah, I love this book, man. It's freaking awesome. It's very action-packed. It moves quickly. And I think even if I was confused with kind of some of the earlier bits of the issue, I still really dug it.
Agreed.
Did you guys get a Indiana Jones and Marion vibe from Rennie and Marisol? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
Like dude rolls in and just like picks up this young girl and then, you know, leaves and she's pissed off.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know if Patrick's got, if he's like an Indiana Jones fan or if it's just kind of become a trope since Indiana Jones, but I can see that.
It's a trope, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, let's rate this up.
Who's going first?
I'll go first. I'll just give it a 4 out of 5. That's my standard Aftershock rating.
Wow. Well, I will go 4 out of 5 as well.
Yeah, I'll go 4 out of 5 as well. And just as a tag, I use this app for cataloging beers called Untappd.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, you know, you rate your beers. Nick Wetmore, friend of the show, is on Untappd. He's one of the few people that I know that does it.
Yep.
My like most common rating there is a 4. So like,
wow.
In a way I kind of default to 4. But, you know, I drink good beers. And Aftershock Comics are good.
Yeah,
so 4 is like
you don't
fair.
Drink Natural Light, so I hear you, buddy.
Yeah.
Damn,
so I agree with, like, 4 is pretty average.
I was hoping that would get some pushback from Ronnie on the Natural Light comment, but I guess not.
Well, that's fine. You guys don't know. Good beer, that's fine.
Travis, you're a beer connoisseur. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you place Natural Light?
10. That's a tenner.
Wow.
See? He learns well.
Way to lie on record. All right. Let's go to the next book.
If he was quick, he would have said, well, my Untappd is 4, so I got to give it a 4.
Oh, man. Yeah, but see, the thing is, he lied because Untappd is rating 1 to 5, and he rated it a 10.
That's right.
Uh-huh. It's just that good.
Mm-hmm.
Natural Light, we reject your sponsorship. All right. Dark Arc number 11, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Juan Doe, letters by Ryan Hill. That's it. Oh, logo by John Hill. I guess we could say that because it does have a cool logo. Who wants to talk about this one?
Well, we all should talk about this one.
Well, we will all talk about this one.
I can nutshell it real fast, I guess.
Give me the nut.
Okay. The rain has stopped. And so we find the purpose for Cherie's wife. And a famous villain has come back to the Ark.
Yeah, Nex is back.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on with really not that much going on.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
No, I get it, man. I get it. I was actually surprised by this issue, because I didn't expect anything in this issue to happen based on previous stuff. You know, like Nex shows up again. You have the babies born.
Babies, plural.
Yeah, babies are born. Krull's babies born as well. And then you have like, well, I don't want to talk about the last page yet. Let's talk about the rest of the issue for now. This was it was really interesting. I was very surprised. So the way that the main story begins and ends is the same, right? So it starts off with the dove being shot with an arrow, and it ends with, well, I guess 3 doves being shot when you see the wider picture,
right?
And then we see who shot the doves, which at first doesn't necessarily tie into the story, but I think ultimately it does in a way, because the main thing about this is like what happens now that the rains have stopped. How is
in Africa?
I knew that was coming. God damn. yes. The rains have stopped in Africa. Weezer is popular again after 30 years. And and we have Dark Ark. So obviously the dove is an important story in the original Noah's Ark story, right? Because Noah sends I think in the original it's actually not a dove. I think in the original story it's a crow, maybe. But over the years when the story's been rewritten several times, it became a dove.
Because it's white of hope.
Yes, because it's a sign of hope. And part of the reason it's a sign of hope is because it's in the Noah's Ark story.
Wouldn't it have been funny if he sent a penguin? Because, you know, penguins can't fly.
That would be funny. But penguins wouldn't need to be in the Ark because they could swim. So there's yes. that. So I like the symbolism with the dove because it symbolizes that this is kind of a fresh start, even though it's not the end of the arc, right? Because I guess the next issue is the end of the arc. Cullen's doing six issue arcs. Is it the end?
This is the start of a new arc.
So it's five issue arcs.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. That makes more sense because the rain has stopped in Africa. And yes. And so the dove is a symbol of this whole thing happening. At the same time, we have like additional like symbolic events, like the first human baby born, the first monster born after the flood. So Trey's family has a kid that's born who is not necessarily human, and that kind of guides us through most of the story. And then you have like a parallel story between the first human baby and the first monster baby being born. The first monster is Krull, and what's his wife's name? Like Faber or something?
Sounds right.
Frure.
So that's kind of the dichotomy between the two. So I like that, obviously. I think that's why I like Cullen as a writer. He's really good at symbolism and like parallel stories. You know?
Yeah. And also it's like how Sela's baby is the monster, but they want to save it. Like Krull's baby is kind of weak and unstable on its feet. Mm-hmm. So then Krull wants to eat it and kill it.
Yeah. Which that was kind of weird. I mean, like, why would he do that?
Well, because it's weak and they're not a weak creature.
Yeah, but of course it's going to be weak. He was just born.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, but, like, as far as I know, like, Krull is living on his own, right? And he didn't necessarily want for there to be more, whatever he is.
Well, I mean, his wife's there, so he's not the last.
I mean, I think that they were unacquainted before. Right? Like,
yeah.
His wife wasn't there in the scene where he comes in and gets him for the Ark.
Right.
Like, I think he, you know, maybe wanted to be the last of the, God, what are they?
I can't remember the name of the monster right now.
Starts with an M, right?
Yeah.
Ah, that's gonna bug me. So I kinda get that. He doesn't seem to like the wife, he doesn't seem to want the kid, you know? And the wife is like, this kid is healthy. It's fine.
Manticore.
You know, Manticore. I was going to say Mandalore.
Wrong franchise.
Yeah. I think that's what's up with that. And I have to agree. I thought it was interesting, the whole parallelism of the story. And like what I maybe saw in it was like the idea of sacrifice. Like save the human baby. Shrey's wife had to sacrifice herself. I guess with the flip side, like I took it as being a healthy baby, but the idea there being you sacrifice the child if it's not strong.
Wait, right. But like, does she sacrifice herself though? Cause she doesn't die, right? She just becomes a monster.
Yeah. So she's sacrificing her human self to become the thing that she hates.
Right. But the thing is, So I thought about this, like, as soon as because this is mentioned a couple times by a few different characters. Matter of fact, I think it's, like, one of the first lines in the book, where now that the rain has stopped, the monsters are, like, Shrey's leading us into hell. Like, it's not the paradise we were promised. Yeah. And there's something else about, like, being monsters. And that's kind of the topic of this issue, I think, more than any other of the previous issues, where you wonder, like, how has this whole journey impacted all the characters? And obviously the human characters on Shrey's arc have had to do some really crappy things in order to survive this flood. And one of the things that they've done is, I mean, for one, hold humans captive in the ark to feed them to the monsters for food. And so then you have this whole thing where, like, well, did the humans kind of become monsters as a result? And that's kind of manifested in this firstborn baby in this new world that is born as a monster, right? He's a vampire. And when Shrey's wife sacrifices herself and becomes a monster, like, I thought to myself, that was even more symbolism of exactly what's going on, where mm-hmm. the things that they've had to do, and we talked about this with, like, animosity all the time, right? Just in animosity, they don't turn into monsters because it's more allegorical. But because of the things they've had to do to deal with this apocalypse, like, are they still necessarily human, or are they just monsters? And to me, it seems like Cullen's saying that they've become just like the monsters because of the things that they've had to do to survive. Except here, it manifests itself physically, where the baby is physically born as a monster, and then Shrey's wife physically becomes a monster to save that baby and turn him back into human. And I thought that was cool. Like, it's like a deep allegorical metaphor, right? Because it's kind of like the Jesus thing, right? Like, Jesus died for your sins. And that's kind of what Shrey's wife did.
Right.
This is the first human baby, and he's not born a human, he's a monster. And so she, like, absorbs his sins so that humanity can start anew in this new world. And I thought that was really cool. I really enjoy that.
And also, another sacrifice is Shrey having to sacrifice his pride to bring back Vex to save the baby.
Yeah. And next, you know, like that.
Because this whole story, we still don't really know why he's. I mean, I guess we do know why he's the leader of the Ark, but, you know, he's not the badass that we thought he was, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, each issue, he loses that momentum as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, having to go back on your word and on your punishment. Yeah.
Well, I think, though, that, like, you know, it seems like the finish line is in sight in some way.
Well, yeah.
Like, you know, hopefully they're going to figure out that there is dry land and find it. And then the monsters can just get off and go their own separate ways. You know, if all the doves got killed, maybe there's a question of how long it takes to figure out where the land is. But I think that also kind of suggests the other big question, which is, like, what's up with those kind of monster looking things that are on dry land with the bows and arrows?
Vikings.
Not Vikings.
Dang it.
But
Indians.
Not Indians. Definitely demons. And I'm hoping as a result we maybe actually see who talked to Shrey about building this ark. Because we've seen Shrey talk to something about the ark, but we've never seen that being, right?
Right.
Like, we talked about this when the angel showed up. Like, I don't think I ever expected God to show up in this book. So the angels were kind of like a means of showing that. But we've never seen any of the people or beings that would work with, presumably, the devil that told Shrey to do this. And I mean, they look demonic, right? I mean, they've got the giant horns on their head, so you can assume demons. But, like, why are the demons hunting doves? Like, why are they hunting doves, right? Like, why are they not in hell?
Well, see, I think that's, I think Travis brought up a good point, is, like, they're shooting the messengers so it doesn't go back to Noah's Ark.
Mm.
But I guess that really doesn't make sense either, because that's why they have both arcs, is to find new land and new hope, I guess, to prosper, both of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like it, though. What I want to know is, how come they're already on land? Why did we need the arc when everybody can just teleport to the land?
Well, maybe that's what we'll find out in this arc.
Well, see, dude, I think that it may be another kind of faction, you know? Just like Echidna was another faction coming out of nowhere. You know, I wonder if, like, it's something along that sort, like fairies or some other kind of mythological lineage that they're going to try to put into this. Mm. So maybe they just figured out how to stay on land. They didn't have somebody telling them that you had to get on a boat or something.
Yeah.
All right. Could be.
Yeah, I'm curious. Was it ever mentioned, like, what Cullen's plan is for this book? Is this, like, a 25-issue story, like Baby Teeth, for example? Or is this just, like, wherever Cullen wants to take it is where it's going to go?
Well, last I knew, this is the third volume of it, and it could possibly go to the fourth volume if need be.
Okay. I'm just curious, because I want to know, like, in terms of timeline of the issues, if we're going to get, like, an answer to why we're in this place, right?
Right.
Because, like, we've kind of seen it, but I don't feel like we really have an answer to why Stray really built the Ark, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think we know what he was told,
mm-hmm.
but we don't know if, like, that's really the truth, or, like, what the alternative motives are, or any of that stuff.
Right. Yeah, and honestly, like, even if this could keep going, even if they do reach land.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, just because it's called Dark Ark and it started out about both arcs doesn't mean that, you know, that it has to always center around that.
Well, to be honest with you, though, I would love to see them come back to a showdown between Shrey's Ark and Noah's Ark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we never saw Noah, right? Like, the only thing we saw of Noah's Ark was those the unicorns being sacrificed.
Right.
So I think that'd be cool to see, but, you know, you're right. We really haven't seen that stuff, so I don't know. I know that I'm digging the book. I think Dark Ark's fantastic. I think it's one of the best books that Cullen's done for Aftershock.
I agree, because I haven't read Witchhammer yet.
Well, true. But that comes out next week.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
Sweet.
I can't wait to read that. All right. Anything else on this one?
No, that wraps it up for me.
Travis?
Yeah, I think I'm good.
All right.
I feel good.
Let's rate it up. Ronnie, you go first.
I'm going insane. I'm going to go 4 out of 5 on this one.
Cool. Travis?
Yeah, I will go 4 out of 5 too. And I think as a final thought, the only thing is I wish that they had done a little bit more to build up, like, Shrey's wife as a character before she, like, you know, now has this big thing happen. But, you know, I like a lot, I'm curious where it's going to go.
Cool. I'm gonna go a little higher, because I really like the allegory in this whole story. So I'm gonna go like a 4.327654198 7654309 Yeah. I really like the allegories in this book. So I'm gonna go a little higher.
Word.
So, God, I'm slacking because I didn't pull up next week's books.
You're not slacking. That's on par with everything.
I'm on par for next week's books because I don't have them pulled up. But guess what? I have them pulled up now. Next week, we have, oh my, a lot of books. We have Pestilence, The Story of Satan, number 5. Final issue, if I'm not mistaken. We have Lollipop Kids, number 2. Excited for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Last Space Race, number 2. And Hot Lunch Special, number 4. God, it's going to be a good week.
And Witch Hammer.
And Witch Hammer, yes.
Good lord.
Yeah.
That's a lot of goodies.
That's a lot of goodies. That's a lot of
for
goodies.
For Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason we do an Aftershock podcast. Aftershock does some really goddamn good books.
Consistently awesome books.
Yeah, that's the key. Consistency.
That's the brand.
That's right. All right, let's wrap this up. You can, of course, reach us all on the Twitter machines. Ronnie's at Rumbar316. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Nerdy Legion. No, that's not it. That's the one I just finished recording. The show is at Aftershock Pod. Sorry, I'm like back to back to back to back. And of course, I'm at Geekvine, I guess. I forgot to say that. And that's it. We'll be back next week to talk about a bunch of new books. Bye bye.
Shock the world!